This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, February 18th, 2009.
Good afternoon. At this time, I'd like to call today's meeting to order. Welcome to today's employee assembly meeting of Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. And I'd ask if there's any late additions to our agenda. Okay, I see there's no late additions to our agenda. We're going to move on to our report from our SA representative.
Hi.
Hi.
We have been working on changing the funding process for clubs and organizations. A lot of nitty-gritty paperwork to our charter. So we've been working on passing and reviewing those, and also we're looking at a committee and a survey on transfer students and helping their assimilation into Cornell via community.
Very nice. Thank you. Then we'll move on to our report from our UA representative. And we'll pass a report from our EA representative to the Faculty Senate.
Yes, Alan Mittman speaking. I attended the Faculty Senate meeting on February 10th, which was reported in the Cornell Sun and various publications. I'll just say that and I'll be happy to speak to individuals more specifically or to the group if you want to know, that there were two major presentations, one by Provost Fox, who went into some detail about the budget situation and what Cornell was doing about it, mostly addressed from the faculty perspective, and he went through it in great detail. Secondly, there was a motion that was brought up with respect to the Milstein building project. It was rendered somewhat moot because the administration before the meeting seemed to have taken the position that that project was subject to the moratorium and would be considered along with other projects. So the motion that was introduced to impose a moratorium was tabled. A second motion that was hastily brought up in light of that one was ruled out of order, and because of the timing of it, an effort to make it heard this week was also defeated. So there will probably be another motion addressing the Milstein building at the March meeting, which I will attend and report back on.
Thank you, Alan. Any questions? Okay, we'll move on to the report from our staff climate survey steering committee representative. That's Bill. He's not here. Did he share any information with anybody? Okay. Move on to report from the chair. Last week we did get a meeting to look at the draft for a change in our charter, which we'll be discussing later on today. I spent most of the meeting doing that. I'm also in the process of going through and sending out to the group different reports that I've done over the last year and a half or so, reports to the Board of Trustees, winter retreat recasts, those type of items, sending them out for your review. If you have any questions or anything on those, get back to me. We canceled a presentation by CIT that was happening today regarding the ensemble project in exchange, but we will be rescheduling them in the future. And that's all I have to report. We have a good packed agenda here coming up. I'd like to concentrate more of our time on that. So we'll move on to the approval of our meeting minutes on February 4th of 2009. Give everybody a quick minute to look at these.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to approve the minutes as submitted.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Alan. Okay, with the motion and a second, we'll make a vote on approving these minutes. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstain? Okay, with that, we will pass the meeting minutes for February 4, 2009 as they are. We'll move on into our committee reports. I ask if you don't have any updates or anything to report, just pass and make a comment. Nothing to report at this time. We're going to pass on the executive committee report at this time. We'll move on to staff recognition and awards committee. There's nothing to report. And now we'll give it to Jason on the communication committee.
Communication committee has nothing to report.
Alan, finance?
I am reviewing recent information regarding the overall cost of the employee assembly and president's address that occurred in October. Some additional expenses from Barton Hall have been identified, and I'm going to meet with our assembly, university assembly office people to investigate that further and report back to the body. Pending that, I have not moved forward on the issue of voluntarily reducing our budget and the implication that might have on future budgets until we have a good handle on the on those expenses.
And Alan did explain this to the exec committee, and we were in agreement at this time until we find out our standing budget remainder, what's remaining, we should not move forward with any type of cost reduction or 10% reduction, as we had mentioned. Okay, we'll move on to the emergency grant funds. Pat?
Yes, we did meet last week, and we are in the process right now of doing some wordsmithing on the processes and procedures. A subgroup of the committee has been identified to work on those processes and procedures, and we'll reconvene to discuss them further. Next week, at our regular Thursday scheduled meeting, Lynette Chappelle-Williams will be joining the committee group to discuss the hardship fund, the concept of doing a simultaneous rollout of criteria for that fund, and identifying how the EGF fund could either complement, support, or help employees with issues that don't necessarily apply to the hardship fund. So Lynette will be doing a presentation, and we'll have a discussion and answer period at that time. And I hope to report at the next meeting the outcome of that.
Thank you, Pat. And just for clarification, there is mention in our charter of the EGF, and those changes, Pat, I'm correct when I say that those changes have been in their draft form now.
I'm sorry, repeat, Brian?
The changes in our charter for the EGF, they are in draft form now.
That is correct. The charter, the actual charter changes, are incorporated within our draft.
Okay. And but the procedures is a separate part of this that is now being worked on in the subcommittee.
That is correct, Brian. It's considered a non-publishable. It's like an internal process, and we need to have more discussion on that before we're ready to move ahead with any changes.
Great. Any questions for Pat? We're going to move on to personnel policy. That's going to remain Pat. Anything to report?
Nothing at this time.
Okay. We'll move on to IOC and Peter.
All right. We have a vote for parliamentarian. We got a one nomination for Gary Stewart. I sent an email, and I didn't get any more email nominations, but if anyone has any last-minute nominations right now, you can go ahead and make them.
Please.
That's the nomination for parliamentarian position. All right.
Okay.
We'll give Gary a chance to make a statement if he wishes to, and then because we only have one candidate, we don't have to kick him out of the room unless anyone here prefers to speak without Gary in the room. Okay, so I'll make a statement, then we'll take a vote.
I'm glad to help. Thank you.
Gary's actually been doing a little research on the side to find out the duties and the responsibilities of the parliamentarian position. He does know that it is instrumental in supporting the executive committee as we get one more voice to meet in a smaller group of the employee assembly. So he is familiar, and he is glad to help.
There's a parliamentarian camp in San Diego. I just had an approach to see if I could go to that.
No.
I would put your request in and with the cough.
We'll review that.
Camp. Thank you.
Okay, I give it back to you. Peter.
All right. So, any other comments? All right. I'll make a motion to appoint Gary Stewart to the position of parliamentarian on the executive committee.
Second. I have a second here. Jason? Any discussion? All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain?
Aye.
Okay, the motion is passed. Congratulations, Gary. You're
thank
now
you, Brian.
Let's take care of that.
Presenting. Thank you.
And the book.
And Jason is handing Gary a Robert's Rules for Dummies.
Right. Book. Doesn't look like it's been opened at all. Thank you.
What we're going to do with the motion being passed is we are going to be rescheduling our executive meetings to a different time on the same date just to accompany Gary's schedule. I'm sure to let everybody know when that is. Anything else from the IOC, Peter?
Nothing else to report.
Okay, thank you. University Benefits Committee report.
Nothing to report.
Thank you.
Are they still suspended?
Employee education, Jason?
Nothing to report.
Okay, we're going to move on to what I consider the business of the day.
Brian, we got a couple more people coming. We've got the trustee report and the UA report as well.
Oh.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
We will go backtrack now. My apologies. And we're going to hear our UA representative.
Hi, all. Just to bring you up to date, we have, at our last meeting, passed a resolution for a new committee called the University Sustainable Committee, also known as USC. At our next meeting, we will be appointing the convener for that committee, and I believe we are going to be contacting the EA for a representative to that committee to get it going before the end of the academic year.
What's the story behind this committee?
It was created along with the assistance and help of Dean Kleinagy and Dan Roth from the Environmental Compliance Office, I believe. And we're going to try, the thought is behind creating a committee is to create a central, unified voice for sustainability on the campus. I can't remember what else we did last week, or last meeting. Coming up this meeting, there will be an amendment from the CJC to the Campus Code of Conduct. We will be restructuring the University Board of Health Services, an amendment, and Beth is going to be coming to discuss the possibility of reviewing the smoke-free campus, and we'll be hearing from the campus store.
Great. Thank you. And you're going to get back to the EA when you have more details about needing a member, or are you asking for a member now?
I will get back to you.
Okay.
Probably in an email.
Any questions? Yes.
What was the change proposed to the campus code of conduct?
It will be on board safety.
It's just a sentence, basically saying what the current city law is, and that who's responsible for enforcing that law.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, just a question. Has Katie Clayton, did he send you a resolution?
Yeah, he hasn't yet. He will be today. He's always done.
We just met yesterday, so he was going to do it.
Great.
Any other questions? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sustainability is not going away. It's going to be a new way of life in our future. Now with that, I will give the floor over to Beth McKinney, our employee elected trustee.
So for the trustee report, the finance committee is meeting today, FYI, and you might hear some outcomes from that meeting. I'm not sure, but keep your eyes open. And the next trustee meeting is second week in March here in Ithaca, and so I'll be able to share more after that.
Thank you. Beth is still working on public forums. We'll be meeting with Mary Offerman on the 25th of this month, and we'll have more details then. We can connect.
Yeah, we're offline talking about possibilities for open forums, but need
a little more information, what type of theme, who would be there as guest speakers, that sort of. Those sort of items.
Right. But the idea is to keep the transparency going. By spring break, which is one option, people will maybe know a little bit more about their department budgets and other things.
Thank you, Beth.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll move back to the ad hoc charter review. The ad hoc charter committee has a draft of changes to our current charter they've worked very hard on, and they're here to present what they have. And I have asked Jason to facilitate this part of it, and I'm going to hand the floor over to Jason.
Thank you, Brian. First off, this is at least the first of at least two reviews of the charter before this assembly. After today's feedback, the charter will go back to committee for tweaking and will come again before this assembly. Depending on how today's discussions proceed with questions and comments, we may call a special meeting to give us more time to review the charter in the goal of getting it out there for our spring elections and the referendum by the employees. The rules of order for today's discussion is to value all members' input regarding including those absent from today's meeting. Everyone will have a chance to speak. I'd like to ask that no speaker be interrupted. All requests to speak should be granted by the chair. If you would like to speak, raise your hand until the chair recognizes and records your name on the speaking list. When called upon and you have the floor, you can address your questions or comments to the chair in cooperation with the committee as consultants on the question or comment. We will proceed article by article. The chair will maintain a speaking list per each article review and starting a new list when we move to the next article. I'd like to ask that you please save any grammatical questions or comments until the end of the review of all articles. We may reserve the right to ask grammatical changes to be emailed to the committee. Are there any questions on today's order? Then at this time, I'd like to recognize Pat Mahoney of the Ad Hoc Charter Review Committee to give us an introduction to the charter changes. Pat?
Okay. As you all can see, the review was extensive, and I agree with what Jason said. Of course, we do have some grammatical issues that we will deal with. Primarily, what we did was we took the existing charter and did some wordsmithing, kind of modified functionality of certain articles, combined them with others, took out some language that we felt was either inappropriate or outdated, updated certain levels of responsibilities, modified other levels of responsibilities with regard to officers and EA members. Ari has compiled for us, and before I go any further, I want to commend Ari for his commitment and intense involvement in this process. Without him, I'm not sure we would have been able to be as successful as we have. So thank you very much, Ari. So anyway, Ari has compiled for us a basic summary of the changes in the charter, kind of outlining article by article what those either substantive, I can't say that very well, or basically just a modification that's not, what's the word that we would use, controversial. So with that, I guess I would say let's go.
All right. Thank you, Pat. So what we're going to do is we're going to move on to Article 1, which is our smallest article. If anybody wishes to speak about the changes proposed in Article 1, just raise your hand and I will record your name in the order that I can recognize you and we'll discuss Article 1. Is there any questions on Article 1? Pat, do you have any comments on Article 1?
I do not. The only thing that I think is important, and Ari, again, I'm going to ask this directly of you. We have identified employees on the Ithaca or Geneva campuses, and we here in Geneva have two other off-site satellite campuses. And I'm wondering if we may want to say Geneva and affiliated campuses of the university. I guess I'm going to ask you, Ari, if that's appropriate.
Well,
we're not talking about Weill or Arecibo or any of the other locations.
Yeah, I'm concerned if you get into affiliated, that somebody might look at that later and say, well, Arecibo is affiliated
yep.
with the Ithaca campus.
Okay.
As long as their employment office or connection is Ithaca or Geneva, they're fine.
Okay, and I agree. Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there's no more comments on Article 1, we'll move on to the...
Is this intended to cover part-time, non-benefited staff, so people who work part-time who are not called regular with benefits? Is that?
That's a good question, because traditionally we have not included temporary employees in this definition. That's what you're getting at.
Yes. I'm not advocating that.
I can't answer whether this allows temporary, and we've just been misinterpreting it all these years, but... We could add non-temporary.
Let's say regular. Pat, would regular describe...
Alan, I think that would be helpful because the word temporary in itself constitutes a six-month or less appointment, and they would, by the nature of that appointment, be unable to serve the term that they are appointed to. So I think benefits eligible or... I'm not exactly sure what the words missing we would do there. But regular, I think, would make sense.
Can we pencil in regular? But I'll look into that a little further with Ari and Pat.
Okay, thank you.
That's an example of a structural change that we're seeking to find in this meeting today. Like those small little glitch things. That's not a grammatical issue, but that's a thing that you can give the feedback to the committee to polish those questions and then bring them back for our second review. Anything else on Article 1? Okay. Let's move on to Article 2, which is definitely going to probably be more challenging. Does anybody have any prepared comments or questions on Article 2? I've got a few questions. In the new section 2.1, I believe it's very important that we get this language very correct, because it is this charter that is really telling the employee assembly that we can be tasked with reviewing university policy and then making recommendations to the president. So I had a question about the footnote down below as an example, and whether that's needed there or should it be put back up in there. And there was also, it says, it starts with 2.1 and it says examines other university policies. Well, there was never a mention of the first policy that we would review. So
other is a mistake.
Okay.
I guess I would think, just to respond to that, Jason, I think that there was, what we were trying to determine here or make clear is that there are several university policies, not by a human resources nature, or personnel policy per se, that ultimately will impact staff in one way or another. And I think it really was a point of clarification, because if people didn't really understand which policies we were referring, I would say it could come out. I'm not married to it.
You're talking about the footnote?
The footnote.
Okay. It could still be there as an example. It's just, I was wondering where, since it's like one of the only footnotes in the document. Okay, we got a question from Brian.
Are there policies that we do not examine and don't have jurisdiction to examine?
Again, I would jump in on that. I think that it's not a requirement, Brian, for us to review any policies, but I think by the nature of how it affects staff, we've kind of empowered ourselves to do that. I don't think there's any requirement. Ari, you might be able to help with that.
There is a limitation. It's what would become Section 2.9 called Representation Exclusions on page 7, which I think that's the most relevant limitation, that basically says you can't get involved in individual grievances. It's not a, you know, an organized labor representation body.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was looking
for. Peter?
In the comments for 2.2, you say that reflects actual practice of assembly. In that case, maybe you can change, allow the chair to select a replacement for himself to go to those leadership meetings, because that's what we've been doing. This stuff, the way it's written here, which basically requires the chair to go to each leadership meeting.
You can still jump in after this, but I recently found out, yes, I'm supposed to be going and not appointing people to replace me. But maybe if you want to give a background of it and see what everyone thinks. Pretty much, you want an art?
Well, one thing I wanted to clear up front that might be difficult to understand from the way the bylaws. In our view, the bylaws are not actually part of the charter in the sense that they can be changed by a regular majority. They don't need to go through the special amendment process, but the charters we've inherited for the assemblies display bylaws in the charter. So even though they're appearing in the charter, it's important to keep in mind, and even though they're part of this proposal because it's moving so many things around, they're not charter changes. So they carry a different level of weight. Just to keep in mind throughout the discussion.
So this bylaw, if we leave it as is, could be changed relatively easy in the future if
yes.
The bylaw is just the majority of an EA member's vote. Okay, so there's not much harm in leaving it as is.
Cool.
But Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I might add, too, Ari and I also had a discussion about this. There may be a consideration to remove all of the bylaws from the charter and put them into their own separate document to take them out of the charter. And I don't know how everyone feels about that, but I think it's something that we might want to think about.
Well, this is Alan Pett. Are all of the bylaws in the charter, and are they not in a separate document?
That is correct.
That was a concern that I had too. I would almost recommend that we strip out the bylaws, because the bylaws are really supposed to be a separate document, and like I already said, it's supposed to be a document that's more easily modified than your charter. Your charter is supposed to have, or your constitution is supposed to have, the really high level things of the structure and fundamental principles of your organization that should never be changed by a majority vote. Those types of changes require like a two-thirds vote and previous notice. The bylaws might be able to be changed and tweaked easier because they're not going to infringe on anybody's rights as membership in the organization. Right?
Yeah, Jason, I feel we leave the bylaws in this as we vote, and it's an opportunity to look at them all now so we don't have to do it again unless we come into a problem with some of them, and then we maybe take the next step and remove them while we try to pass this.
I would recommend that we consider, after reviewing them in the way you just said, taking them out, because if we're going to present this for the full vote, it seems to me unnecessary to have the bylaws as part of the charter amendment process when they're really not part of the charter amendment process. So I have no objection to reviewing them now.
See if we agree.
Because what we're really doing today, therefore, is looking at charter amendments and bylaw amendments.
Peter?
If we do end up taking the bylaws out, we should still have a single publicly accessible document which lists the charter and the bylaws together for easy perusal by interested people.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to agree with both what Alan and Peter just said.
I'd be happy to facilitate bringing to the next meeting a separated version of the bylaw.
And Ari, just for a point of interest, how do the other assemblies do that?
Well, none of the other assemblies, since I've been here, have done a comprehensive charter review. But they have the bylaws displayed in line like the employee assembly does. And I'm assuming at whatever point each of these assemblies was created, that was just the practice that they chose.
Okay. Thank you.
I got a question, Pat, on new section 2.9, the representative exclusion. A lot of the things it says were excluded from make pretty perfect sense, except for the last one, conditions of work. And I think maybe as an HR representative, are you able to explain, is that some type of legalese of what conditions of work really means?
Well, yeah, I think conditions of work are typically, how would I explain it? It's if they are dissatisfied with their supervisor, or if they are asking for, Alan, help me with this word. If they're trying to get an accommodation as far as their condition of work. I think
terms
so
and conditions
broad.
Of employment would be a fuller way of saying it.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I gather what this is getting at is we don't operate on interested party terms and conditions of employment, but rather general questions of terms and conditions of employment.
Does that help?
Yeah, it wasn't a big thing for me. I just wanted to know if anyone else would chime in on the conditions of work being just seems a little vague, but I guess if the HR people understand what that phrase there means, we can...
Should we just change it to say...
Yeah, I could offer a friendly amendment to say, or terms, or other terms and conditions of employment.
Something.
Okay. Pat, did you get that for some notes that's for the committee?
I did.
Okay, thank you. Right. Peter?
We could also add in one of those coolly footnotes with maybe some couple brief examples for people who aren't HR experts.
Okay. That's good. You have that, Pat?
Yeah, got
okay.
it.
Is there any other further comments on any of the sections of Article 2? Julie?
Yeah, I have one question. This is bylaw 2.9.2a. This is also related to something that Bill had brought up, too, about the assembly points one of the things that are struck out about that a member would choose to go to meetings where we anticipate business pertinent to this assembly. And I think Bill had made a comment, I'm kind of just referring to this, that we've been speaking about strengthening the ties with the other assemblies, but this might be sending out a conflicting message that we're doing it when we feel like it. So I'm just, this is the first major thing that Bill had brought up. I don't know if we want to discuss this at all.
Pat had prepared some answers to Bill's questions, so if I want to just turn it over to Pat to review some of those, and specifically the one that Julie just brought up, Pat?
Yeah, actually, Ari and I just spoke about that earlier as well, and I guess I want to defer to Ari on this one.
At least as far as we understood it, we're not talking about changing. Well, there is change in the practice in that it says that they don't need to attend all of the meetings of the other assemblies. But right now, the assembly, at least while we've been here, hasn't observed this at all. In other words, the assembly hasn't sent delegates to SA or GPSA. And I believe Alan is the first delegate to be regularly attending faculty senate meetings in our experience. And the thing with GPSA and SA that makes it unlikely in our view that you'd ever be able to attend all of their meetings is they happen in the evening. SA meets for 2.5 hours every week, and GPSA meets every other week for about 2 hours in the evening. So I think it would be good to have something that gives some guidance as to what the expectations are for the delegates, and that they're not expected to attend every single meeting because that's not realistic. The other thing is that's the only change in this article. Most of what it does is it pulls out how the interaction happens and puts in the bylaw instead of in the charter proper. So the delegates and the notice are now bylaws instead of the charter.
I'd just like the record to reflect that, you know, we've addressed Bill's concerns that were submitted via email, and Bill will have a chance to review this meeting's recording in minutes and can add to it in the next review of the charter. Does anyone have any other? Ari, do you want to address the second Article 2 comments by Bill, the 2.11 and 13?
The idea there was this conflict resolution process. First of all, none of us have ever seen it used, but in Robert's Rules of Order, there's already a provision that allows an assembly to reconsider an action it's taken if somebody wants to bring that motion up. And certainly delegates from other assemblies could talk with this assembly by a variety of means to initiate that kind of a motion. I don't think it needs to be written in the charter. Also, there was some language in here which seemed to be dictating how other assemblies would contest motions, and I don't think that the employee assembly's charter should dictate how other assemblies work. Bill had a concern about whether this was changing the university assembly's charter, and I don't believe it is. And the university assembly system review committee has not met in 6 to 8 years, so I think having a reference to it is probably not helpful anyway.
The what hasn't met?
The UA committee that it refers to.
Okay.
Yeah. If Bill or anyone else has questions that they have submitted in writing, since some of us don't have those in front of us, can you read what they are so we know what he's responding to? Or can you give us some?
Oh, okay. I'll just...
You don't have to go backwards, but...
Okay, so what Bill had stated for Section 211.13, first, it sounds like by making this change, we have changed the UA's charter. If this is correct, Ari might want to respond to it. Second, as it was written, it sounds like we were a sub-assembly under the UA, specifically Section 212. I do not know if this was the intent, and I would agree that we should. At the same time, I do believe there is some merit in hearing from other assemblies if there is a strong objection or concern to an action we are taking. I believe it is a good check and balance, and it shows we are willing to work with the other assemblies, again trying to keep stronger ties. I believe if we left in 2.11, less the last sentence, took out 2.12 and left in 2.13, we would maintain control of our own actions but still have checks and balances with other assemblies. As to delays, I do not recall this coming up in the time I've been on the EA, so it is not as it disrupts our activities. Having it in there for an extreme case would be helpful, though. Do you have any further comment on that, Ari?
We could work up a bylaw to explicitly mention that the employee assembly welcomes the other assemblies to non-voting liaisons, which I don't think is actually in here, but should be because it's in the practice. Okay.
And to go... Julie?
Not to go back, I just rereading this one, the one that we just went over, 2.8, 2.9. Do we need to have anything in here about, I guess, oversight in terms of who that particular person, are they already in our general meeting minutes to be reporting back, or how are they communicating the information? Is that something that should be in here? Because it's not.
We have a mailing list infrastructure. I think there are many ways you could do it. And
I'm just concerned, if there should be something within the charter to have some oversight over with that position and functionality in terms of how what they're doing with the information.
Well, if the assembly feels it's necessary to spell it out in that level of detail, sure, but I personally don't think it's necessary to do that because, I mean, you already have on the agenda report from liaisons and things like that.
I got a question. We don't have a standing report from the GPSA. Do we not have a representative to that?
Nor the SA.
What?
You don't have a representative to the SA or the GPSA.
I mean, it's not on the...
Oh, from our body, but we've got an SA representative that is on our standing agenda. Should we also be having a representative from the GPSA come to our meetings for an update, or is that something...
If they appoint one, but they haven't appointed one.
Do they have it in their charter to appoint one to us?
I don't remember if it's in their charter or their bylaws, but yes.
Oh, okay. So it's a vacancy on their part. Okay. Yeah?
Yeah, well, would that be true of the faculty senate as well? Why is it the student government bodies?
We have a faculty senate, an EA representative to the
no,
faculty.
No,
oh, in the reverse?
In the reverse. If it's for the students, why would it be considered for the faculty as well?
I think there's a vacancy for them too. I mean,
okay.
All of these bodies can appoint liaisons to each other, but
if they don't want. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think the feel of our body so far is that we've not turned away any liaisons. It's just we're dealing with some vacancies to have these people show up and be part of our standard.
I would support on 211, 212, and 213 the note that is in the margin. If it's the president's role to resolve potential discrepancies, if we're comfortable with that, then I don't think we need to develop a process in the charter for resolving them.
Does the document have an appendix? And would it be appropriate to have a comment like that in appendix in case there's ever a question in the future as to why such and such isn't in our charter? You know, for a future body wondering why our charter doesn't include certain things.
Well, the commentary and documentation will continue to be available in our archive, so if somebody wanted to go back to the legislative history.
That's 5 minutes.
Is there any other questions or comments on anything on Article 2? Liam?
Well, the only thing I was going to ask is maybe there was mentioned that where they anticipate business pertinent to the assembly. Maybe that's what those other assemblies, but it's up to them how they want to determine if they should send anybody to our to our meetings or not, but maybe if there's things that are relevant or pertinent to their assemblies, I don't know. It's just the point I wanted to make.
Brian?
What is it? 2-8?
The new 2-8?
Page 7.
Mm-hmm.
The assembly appoints, who on the assembly? And how are they appointed?
The assembly appoints one of its voting members
to serve as non. So we want to send someone to the GPSA as a representative. Who, it says the assembly appoints. How do they appoint? Who appoints them? That's
anywhere it says that.
Yeah.
Motion to appoint so and so to serve in this role. Majority vote. So anytime it says the assembly is doing something, unless there's another procedure specified, it's
this is. I see that being a lot of, with what I've noticed in the past, there's been a lot of appointments made, and it has been a, something needs to happen with how it happens. So this is good, but that's a lot of voting to appoint all these people.
Well, it says in accordance with the rules of the assembly, so we could, I don't think we have to burden the charter with it. We can, we want to pick out certain functions where the rules should be dispensed with vis-a-vis what Ari just said. We can come up with a comprehensive list and say in these cases the rules are as follows. But I don't think a charter needs to get to that detail and bog down future assemblies myself.
Yeah, and we should address it at a later point. Maybe it could be the same process by which committees are staffed.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments on Article 2? If not, let's move to Article 3.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to comment that for the sake of moving through this process, I know that this committee was also charged with really reviewing this whole seat allocation, and we have not moved ahead with that at this point. And Ari, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we felt that that's something that we could change after we got through the charter.
So what are you just asking to put old Section 3.01 on hold? Is that...
And then, I think what Pat is saying is that the committee did not attempt to greatly change the way representation occurs, just to clean up the language for the existing practice.
Okay.
And leave the question about restructuring representation to a future meeting.
Okay.
Future process.
Do you have any questions for any of the sections of Article 3?
Well, I guess I'm
viewing Bill's email, and he has no comments on anything in 3. Alan?
I had a question. I have no objection to striking any bylaw, because this is going to be in another document anyway, but 3.0.1.A strikes the... seems like the definition of an underrepresented group. I'm not sure where the operative language is to include a member of an underrepresented group. Is that someplace else, or is this all, you know, to allocate a seat to an underrepresented member? Is that somewhere else, or is that all comprehended within this bylaw, which I think deserves further discussion when the whole representation question is brought up?
It's all within the context of that section. And that hasn't been invoked. Let me, if anybody here remembers it, I don't think this has been used in the time we've been here. Pat, do you remember what the... I think there was just a feeling that it was dated and not appropriate language for what it was trying to achieve.
Yes, I agree. And the word underrepresented, Alan, to you or me, we would have, from an HR perspective, a clear idea of what that means. but for the Cornell community proper, underrepresented could mean a whole bevy of things. And I think without a really clear definition of that term, I felt, and I think the committee agreed, that it was probably not an appropriate bylaw to include in the charter.
Yeah, my comment would be that I think the whole seat allocation has to be reviewed, and I think we're tabling that for further discussion.
Right. Yes, I would concur.
I think, if I can jump in, that is, again, is a kind of a big piece that we thought that to try to get the charter in line with practice and then go back and start reviewing some of really structural changes that are very different than just aligning our practice with our charter. So this, and I think we've talked about, we actually had a different committee and we combined it into this one, and it was the intent of this committee to keep working for a review of the how seats are allocated on the assembly. So I think we updated the wording, but there's also thoughts about reallocating seats that will come later. Redefining representation, I guess is the word.
Pat, am I correct that we now have two at-large seats when previously we had one?
Well, actually, that was another change in the charter. I believe that it was, I don't know that we have any at-large seats other than Geneva at-large, or at-large. Ari or Amy, maybe you can help with that. I don't believe we have just an at-large seat.
That's correct. We got rid of, there was some ambiguity about, it looked like the language was trying to say that if the Geneva seat couldn't be filled with a Geneva person, it should be at large. And I believe under the modified rules, if it can't be filled with a Geneva person, it would remain vacant. So a little bit more strongly assert that Geneva's representation should be better kept empty if it's not occupied by somebody from Geneva.
Well, we do have an at-large in the endowed side and the statutory side.
That's
yeah,
with respect to exempt and non-exempt.
Right.
So I guess, again, that would go back to the allocation, the seat allocation. We might want to discuss that when we get to that section.
I got a question in section 352. The elections committee, to mitigate potential conflicts of interest, the elections committee resolves any disputes raised regarding election rules without review by the assembly. Just a little concerned about the without review by the assembly part. If you could speak to that.
Elections committee consists of all the members of the assembly who are not up for re-election. So another way of stating this is only the group of assembly members who are not potentially up for re-election may participate in election decisions.
Okay.
The disinterested members. So you wouldn't want that to be reviewed again by the full assembly with the interested members. That's the point of it.
Okay. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And is it too detailed to have in our charter that says the elections must be completed and tabulated no later than the last day of April? Or is that critical for an election timeline? Is there a way to word it to be more conservative?
From our office's perspective, I like that being in there because there's certain statements about the assembly has to be seated by the first day of June and things like that. And there's supposed to be an organizational meeting. The assembly also needs to appoint its UA delegates before the end of April, so we want to have the elections wrapped up by the end of April.
Sure, our constitution states when elections are held and when the
president's sworn in.
And when the,
right? 354, page 11, number 2. At the next meeting after solicitation has been closed, the chair presents a slate. Would it be okay to have the IOC chair present the slate of eligible candidates?
I don't have an objection to that.
Can I just ask why, though?
Well, the IOC chair is involved in... Well, it wouldn't be either if they were up for... Wait, hold on a second. The IOC...
Never mind, I'm going to... I was rereading. I was thinking that the chair was leading the meeting, but it's just saying presenting the slate. So
right.
And then does it matter if the IOC chair is up for re-election?
That's what I went back and looked. That was it's an incidental vacancy by appointment. So it
doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay.
And then on the same note, same page, number 3, to conduct the election, the chair of the meeting would be IOC chair. It's kind of what Peter did today. It was, he's the IOC chair, and he actually brought up this internal EA vote and nominations, asked Gary to speak.
There is kind of a shifting of roles here, but I think the idea there was the chair leads the meeting in general, so unless there's a special reason why the chair wouldn't lead the meeting in this situation.
Was that delegable? Can the chair delegate that to the IOC chair? It wouldn't be prohibited, would it?
Well, it's an internal operation, that the whole filling of agency. And that's why I feel it would be more appropriate. I mean, the chair could do everything.
Well, I'm just saying, what this lays out is how it will happen in an employee assembly meeting. So the chair is leading the employee assembly meeting. So I can't think of a good reason why the chair would step down. Like, it makes sense for the vice chair of internal operations to manage the solicitations outside of the meeting and, you know, present the slate. But as far as actually moderating the meeting and telling people when their time is up and things like that, the chair does it in every other situation. Why not this one?
But that's not what we did today.
Right. This is proposed.
Okay.
I feel your pain, Brian.
No, it's just, These type of the little wordings, that's why we're doing this, to prevent issues from happening in the future. So, I understand nobody's on my side on this one. No problem, leave it as is, I'm fine with it. It's not going to hold me up.
Are there any other questions on anything on Article 3? You have one? If we move it on to Article 4, it's a quite lengthy one. 6 pages. I guess I'd like to ask if we think we're on a good track to finalize a charter review by having another full meeting, or should we entertain a special meeting for next Wednesday? So that we have our special meeting and then our regular meeting, so 2 additional full meetings to discuss further charter changes.
Okay. I suggest a lot of these, and I neglected to do this myself, a lot of these questions could have been answered prior to the meeting, the little words and the questions. I just suggest another meeting, definitely, and everybody looks at this not just at the meeting, and sends these messages to the group and receives this ad hoc charter review committee answer through email to kind of prepare us. Not everything, but the little items.
Yeah, I understand that, the little items. I was just going to say my concern is that it is good for us to all go through this as the entire assembly. And with somebody emailing and stuff like that, I know that for myself that will get lost in the shuffle of work if there's little details that people are going through. Anyway, I'm voting either for an extra meeting or that we will need to do the next meeting.
Well, we definitely need an extra meeting.
Yeah.
Peter?
If we schedule a special meeting, could we require that we have a quorum for that meeting to happen? I mean, if not, if people show up, we don't have it. I feel more comfortable if we have a quorum of members for that special meeting.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Just a point of interest, since I have my computer in front of me, it looks like next week on Wednesday, Gary, you have a Soup and Hope talk.
Yeah, that's right.
At noon?
Yeah. I won't be here because I got to be over in Sage pretending to be wise. So,
where are we if on the election time frame? If we pick this up at our next regular meeting and then had a special meeting after that week, so we take a week off and then we do two meetings in 2 weeks. Where would that put us?
If this can be adopted in whatever modified form on April 1st, we're fine. So I'm terrible at doing that kind of math in my head, but
I
think it would work.
Know that Mary Oppenheim is coming on the 4th, March 4th.
What's our next meeting date?
The next meeting date is March 4th.
Okay.
And then the meeting after that, of course, will be on the, whatever, the 18th.
And it has to go out to all university-wide, to all the staff, right?
Hopefully for the last time. Because one of the changes in Article 7 is going to change the way we modify our charter. It will make it easier to change our charter in the future.
Okay.
But to comply with the existing charter, it has to go out to a referendum, and we've got some procedures in line if that we don't get the threshold of votes required for that.
So we're going to do this definitely in 2 weeks, before and after Mary comes. Are we going to have a meeting before next week's, the next meeting, or are we going to just put it on hold for 2 weeks and then decide?
I mean, it's better if we try to schedule sooner rather than later and see if we can get a quorum. I mean, if Gary's
I could be here at 1:05 next week, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or if people boo you out of the hallway.
That could very well
be. Can we extend the encore? We'll keep you there.
What about extending next meeting for an hour?
Should we start a little later?
I think the beginning.
Oh, you're saying extending the meeting.
So we work on at 2:30 instead of 1:30. At this point, everyone seem okay with that?
I think that's cool.
Instead of having it this time. And in 2 weeks after that meeting, we'll know by 2:30 when we're released what we have to do to get this to happen, whether we have to have a meeting twice a week or special meetings or if we can hold it off. So let's have a 2:30 adjourn. We got to check the availability of this room.
Are you talking about the 4th, Brian?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So March 4th from 12:15 to 2:30.
Tentative, as long as we have the room.
So we're not having a special meeting next week.
Okay.
If we can extend it by an hour, everybody's already here.
Okay.
If this room isn't available, couldn't we move to another room?
Of course.
Instead of canceling it?
Yeah.
The other office.
So, Amy, do you mind checking that and letting everyone know?
So I would like to then, so we're going to pause, we're going to stop now with Article 3. We'll pick up on Article 4 the next time. And just another call to people, if you haven't already, you know, read through this line by line, and if you can, come prepared with your questions or comments. It'll make it go pretty smooth. I think we did a good job today. We framed through
you know, Article 2, which was had some serious changes in it, and 3. So we're almost halfway done. So.
And Jason, I guess I would request too that we don't go back. We start with 4 and go forward with comments.
Yes, I agree.
Unless someone feels very strongly about going back, I'd hate to rehash.
We can maybe spin around once we get through Article 7, and then we deal with the grammatical changes and those types of things.
Right, okay.
How many are we going for?
Six.
Okay. I didn't know if it was 7 or down 6. Okay.
Yes, this concludes the ad hoc charter review portion of the meeting, and I will turn it back over to Brian.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Ari.
You're welcome.
We're going to move on. Any old business that anyone knows of? Anything we're forgot? Any new business? Open forum for a few minutes, and we'll release. I had one topic I'd like to throw out there. With the economic crisis and what's happening, layoff is a hot topic. As far as what I've seen, it's kind of quieted down, and I just wanted to see if any of you have any updates or have heard any rumors spreading around, anything going on out there. Yes,
I think this is the quiet before the storm. I think it's going to get worse.
Okay.
But I think more bad news is coming.
Okay.
I think so.
I agree.
Being in a department that's going through budget cuts right now, it's very quiet, but we're also very stressed as we're trying to make these cuts, and it's a little jittery, so.
Yeah. I got a sad deal mostly with the town, and you know, the Cornell's influence on the county, and you know, we're the largest employer in a 17 county region, too, so folks in town are very nervous. And one thing I was going to ask Beth is that when the trustees are meeting, is there anything that's like remotely optimistic or any glimmer of anything positive in discussions? Because I think it'd be wonderful if employees could hear something that's not going to change. So you're not guessing, you're not saying, I hope things are right, but just something like, you know, within all this crap that's going on, here's a good thing that's been happening. Mm-hmm. And this is a cause for optimism or whatever, because I just think that people feel beat down and they're walking on eggshells, and that some inspirational development from, no matter how small, there's no downside to it.
That's what soup and hope is for.
It's in your hand.
Well, ironically, most people are calling it soup and dope. So it's going to be a very nice event.
That's what they came up in the last meeting I was in today. Anyway, the one thing that is a recurring theme is how dedicated the president is to preserving jobs. And you'll see it in everything he's written. But it's not. I don't think it's doing the trick, because what is happening right now is everyone's budgets are being scrutinized, and then sometime soon they're going to be finalized. And once budgets are finalized, then things will jump into action. And if there are going to be layoffs, people will find out that they're going to be laid off as, you know, ahead of time, but starting whatever the date is, you know, July 1st maybe. And so I agree that there's a calm before the storm.
I also think, too, that Cornell, you know, we're part of the village. Mm-hmm. And no matter what happens here, we're dealing with the state, we're dealing with the nation, and we're dealing internationally. Mm-hmm. So it's overwhelming, you know what I mean? So it's hard to turn that around. I don't know what can turn it around.
I know, but I'll keep my eyes out for anything positive, and maybe we can also work on that angle in our communications, you know, EA communications.
True. In the mid-year report that was submitted to President Sports, one of the items from our winter retreat I included was more publicity on positives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same kind of theme here.
One positive that I have an inkling about, which I think probably more information will be forthcoming, but because of my human resources link, there will be an opportunity for people to do more of the flex type of work, or be able to
exert some control over their work life balance, by if you've got an idea of something that you'd like to do, ask your supervisor.
There's workshops.
There are workshops around it, but there might be another push coming along. It's my sense. I'm not 100% sure because I don't know what's going on.
What's the purpose of that? Is it?
The purpose is cost savings.
Okay.
And work-life balance. They're both very strong priorities, and one helps the other.
Okay.
And so if you want to use the excuse that it's going to save money, you can.
Right. You save energy when your computer's off when you're not in the office, but you have to remote to it, so it has to be on so you can do your work. But, no, there are, it's a whole big picture, and that's just something that helps. And it also helps with morale, and you help families cope with pressures and demands.
Yeah.
Well, our office just sponsored this morning a webinar, telephone webinar on work life and flex, and it was attended by about 15 people.
Fantastic.
Which was a great turnout, and we've had others like that. So our office, Work Life Hat, is spreading the word that these flexible arrangements, whether it's condensed work weeks or different starting hours or telecommuting and such things, are available, and we're trying to educate supervisors and non-supervisors about
it. The other thing that is very positive from two angles is the Hardship Fund, which I know the Hardship, Lynette's in communication with Pat as chairman of both of those projects, but there's an opportunity there to apply for funds and also to give to that fund. Make people feel very positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I agree, Beth, and also the commitment that the president has made as well, even though there will most assuredly not be a SIP program this year,
mm-hmm.
The commitment that he has made to those individuals making less than I can't recall exactly what the amount
40,
is. $40,000 to receive, I believe the amount is $750 lump sum. I think that's a very positive.
That will help. And with that, we are out of time. And I thank everyone for coming. We made some major progress here. Take care and see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
Yeah.
That's definitely
that
life.
Hey, that's a good.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.